Hi, we're at the beginning of Parshas Bo, and we're in the middle of the Makos. There are seven down and three to go. So what I'm going to do in this class is look at the Makos in general and what lesson we can take from the general description of the Makos based on the Tzen Urena. And then I'm going to look at one Mak in particular, the Mak of Arbe, and how all the words in the Psukim really give us very helpful insights, and looking at the words of the Tzen Urena in particular can help us appreciate the Tzen Urena. So this class might be a little bit longer, but I really felt that there was so much content and many worthwhile ideas in this parsha that I wanted to share it with you. So to begin with, each makkah in the parsha has a pattern. The Tzen Urena, quoting Rabbeinu B'chaye, writes that the makkos had a timeline to allow it to take one whole year from the beginning to the end. On the 15th of Nisan, 1 year before the Jews left Egypt, Hashem appeared to Moshe in the Sneh, the burning bush, and commanded him to go to Paro. For 7 days, Moshe debated with Hashem, arguing he should not go. Once Moshe agreed to go, he needed to get permission from his father-in-law Yisro to go to Paro, to be able to leave to Mitzrayim, which happened on the 21st of Nisan. Moshe came to Mitzrayim and warned Paro that he should send Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Coming to Egypt and warning Paro took 8 days, and with that ends the month of Nisan. For 3 months, Iyar Sivan Tammuz, Moshe hid from Paro. The Makkah of Dan started on Rosh Chodesh Av. For 7 days, the Makkah was very strong, and after this, there was a 3-week break between Makkah to Makkah, and all the Makkos followed this sequence. Makkas Bechoros was in Nisan. In the previous Nisan, Moshe had already warned Paro about Makkas Bechoros, and so this all took 12 months. When Rasha'im, evil people, die, their judgment in Gehenim lasts 12 months. Likewise, the Rasha'im, who were the Mitzriim, lived for 12 months with these troubles. There were 3 series of Makkos as described by the acronym Ditzach Adash Be'achav, which you might be familiar with from the Haggadah. The Makkos can be divided into a series of 3 Makkos, 3 Makkos, and then 4 Makkos. The first 3 were Dam Tzvardei Kinim, blood, frogs, and lice, which is Ditzach. The next 3 were Arov Dever Shechin, wild animals, pestilence, and boils, Adash. And the last one was Barad Ar Bechoshech and Bechoros, hail, locust, darkness, and the death of the firstborn son, Be'achav. Rabbeinu B'chaye writes that for each series of Makkos, Hashem sent Moshe to warn Paro 2 times, and there was no warning for the 3rd in the series. The first time, for example, with Dam, blood, Arov, with wild animals, and with Barad, hail, Moshe went to the Nile. In Parshas Va'era, we discussed the reason that Moshe went there was because Paro pretended to be a god. So Moshe went at the time he was using the Nile as a bathroom because he pretended that he never needed the bathroom, and Hashem wanted to demonstrate that he is not a god, rather Hashem is the god. The second makkah in each series, Tzvardeya, frogs, Dever, pestilence, and now at the beginning of the Parsha with Arba, locusts, Hashem sent Moshe to Paro's house, to his palace, to warn him there. The reason that Moshe was sent to the palace was that Paro boasted that he had a luxurious house and he was proud and confident in his material possessions. Hashem wanted to make a point that his possessions were not really in his control, just like the Nile wasn't in his control. So Hashem started the punishments in these 2 places during each of the series of the Makkos. The Makkos broke the rules of nature. They had within themselves, they had an inherent structure. The Makkos were not delivered randomly, as the purpose was to establish Hashem's involvement in this world. The Tzen Urena quotes Rabbeinu B'chaye later in the Parsha, but I'm going to mention it here, and where he writes that Hashem brought the Mitzriim 10 Makkos, which correspond to 10 evil things that the Mitzriim did to Bnei Yisrael. Hashem always punishes midah keneged midah, measure for measure, a consequence that matches the poor behavior. During slavery, first, the Egyptians had Bnei Yisrael draw water for them and water their animals. As a consequence, Hashem made the water turn into blood and the animals could not drink. Second, they arranged that Bnei Yisrael had to get up very early in the morning from their beds and go to work. Therefore, Hashem brought on them frogs in their beds and the frogs did not let the Mitzriim sleep. Third, the Egyptians did not let Bnei Yisrael go to the bathhouse to clean themselves off. And because of this, the workers of the Jewish nation had a lot of lice because they had so much filth on them. And therefore, Hashem brought on the Egyptians the Makkah of Kinim, lice. Fourth, the Mitzriim commanded Bnei Yisrael to catch terrible wild animals in the desert and in the fields for sport and game. And as a result, Hashem brought on them the Makkah of Arov, a mixture of bad animals from all the species. Fifth, the Egyptians forced Bnei Israel to watch their animals in the fields, and so Hashem brought dever, pestilence, and all the animals died. Sixth, the Mitzrayim never gave Bnei Israel warm water to wash, and then Bnei Israel were never clean. Hashem sent boils onto the Egyptians, so it would be painful for the Egyptians to wash. Seventh, when the Egyptians saw a Jew, they threw stones at them. Therefore, Hashem brought hailstones and burning fire on the Egyptians. Eighth, the Egyptians forced Bnei Israel to spread manure on their fields. Therefore, Hashem brought on them the Makah of Arba, locusts that ate their fields. Ninth, one who didn't fulfill all their orders quickly enough were taken to jails and dark dungeons. Therefore, Hashem sent on them the Makah of Choshech, darkness. Finally, tenth, they want to destroy and kill Bnei Israel that are called my son, my firstborn. Therefore, Hashem killed their firstborns. The Midrash, according to the Tzenarena, has a separate explanation as to why these Makos were chosen. The Midrash writes that Hashem brought the Makos on the Egyptians just like a warrior who wants to conquer a city progresses. Initially, a warrior cuts off the water supply to the city, so the inhabitants won't have anything to drink and they will need to surrender. Similarly, Hashem struck the Egyptian waters, which turned to blood, and they didn't have water to drink. Second, warriors make loud noises and shouts in order to scare the enemy. Hashem brought frogs onto the Mitzrayim that shouted and made noise, and they were so loud that their voices went up to the heavens. After this, the warrior instructs his troops to start attacking with arrows. Hashem sent lice that entered into the body just like arrows. Fourth, the warrior sends all kinds of troops into the city to conquer it. Same here. Hashem sent a mixture of all kinds of animals. Fifth, the warrior releases poisons that kill all the animals, just like Hashem sent Malchus Dever, pestilence, and all the animals that were in Egypt died. Sixth, the warrior grabs enemies wandering outside in the city and tortures them with fire so that they will tell how and in what way they can conquer the city. Hashem sent the Egyptians boils that burn their flesh and bodies. Seventh, the warrior commands his troops to throw large stones on the walls to make it fall. Similarly, Hashem sent hailstones that killed people and animals and collapsed many houses. Eighth, the soldiers enter the city just as Hashem sent the locusts into Egypt. Ninth, the warrior grabs suspicious people and puts them into custody. Similarly, Hashem brought on the Egyptians darkness, and everyone was caught at home as if they were in prison. And tenth, Hashem killed all the firstborn. Aside from being interesting, what is the point of Rabbeinu Bachai and the Midrashim highlighting so many details about the organization and sequence of the Makos? One lesson that it is important is the Makos were opportunities for the world to see that Hashem is involved in every aspect of life. Nothing in the world is haphazard. In addition, whenever Hashem punishes the Egyptians, there are two purposes being fulfilled here simultaneously, which is only something Hashem, in his infinite power and wisdom, can do. Hashem at once is punishing the Egyptians for their cruelty and treating the Jewish people with love. The world is learning that one cannot sin and get away with it, and every punishment is exact. At the same time, they are learning that Hashem is demonstrating a boundless love for the Jewish people. When Hashem plans the Makos to lead up to the salvation, as the Midrash describes, it is coming from a love for the Jewish people to take care of them in an optimal way. Let's go back to the beginning of the parasha. At the beginning of the parasha, we start a cycle with a new Makah, and Hashem tells Moshe to go to Paro to warn him about the Arba, the locusts. Bo el Paro, come to Paro. Hashem says to Moshe, come to Paro and warn him that I'll strike him if he doesn't send Bnei Israel. Paro has experienced warning after warning, yet he keeps saying no. We don't want to become like him. How do we avoid it? The Tzenarena, quoting Rabbeinu Bachai, gives us advice from Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei. Shlomo HaMelech says, Ashrei Adam Mefachid Tamid. Praiseworthy is the person who is always afraid and worried and looks that from his actions, nothing bad should result. This pasuk calls the person Adam, man. Elsewhere in Tehillim, there was a similar but slightly different phrase. There it says, Ashrei Ish, praiseworthy is the man. Why does this pasuk use the term Adam, man, rather than Ish, which also means a man? The word Adam hints to the fact that the building blocks of a person is dirt, its physical material. We are all tied to our physical beings. Every person has to eat and drink and stay warm to stay alive. We are dependent on our physicality, and we cannot live without it. That reliance must be treated with caution. The pasuk from Mishlei is warning us that although we are physical, we should be very, very careful. We should be mefachei tamid, always concerned to not overemphasize our physicality. A person is not only made up of adama, earth, he also has a neshama, his soul. How can we use our physicality to do the right thing? How do we do this? Man was given sechel, intellect, that he can use to make good choices. When a person wants to eat and drink, which he needs to do, there are two options. He can eat and drink to enjoy himself and fill his stomach and his desires, or he can eat to have energy and to have a healthy and strong body that can serve Hashem with all its strength. When we are faced with a choice, we should stay concerned that our adamness is not driving us. We should stay vulnerable and opening and open to being self-critical to remember to emphasize our spiritual side. It leads us to have anava, humility, and to submit ourselves to what Hashem wants. Not having this midah of being careful about one's physical indulgences leads to hardening one's heart. Rabbeinu Bachai, not quoted by the Tzenarena here, warns that this hardening of the heart happens when a person does not have goals. When we have spiritual goals, for example, to become better people, our actions lead us in the right way. But if we keep focusing on our physicality as an end unto itself, we become overindulgent. We become adam in a negative way. We become arrogant and cruel. And a person hardens his heart against Hashem, chas v'chalila, which will in turn cause him to make poor decisions and act poorly. This attitude was what led Paro to harden his heart against Hashem. He wanted what he wanted for himself. He was highly materialistic, and this was the reason he hardened his heart against Hashem. At first, he hardened his heart on his own. He could withstand the pressure of Moshe and his appeals to justice, where Moshe asked to let the Jews rest because for him, being rich was his goal. Paro wanted money and power and honor, and he could live with a little discomfort of the Makos if it meant continuing his lifestyle. For the first number of Makos, Paro resisted, and he could resist being convinced because he had too much to lose to give anything up. Afterwards, as he was living through the final five Makos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already hardened Paro's heart for him, so that he wouldn't want to listen, so that he would accept and absorb the Makos. How could this happen? How could Hashem take away Paro's free will? There are many, many explanations in the Rishonim and Achronim. The Tzenarena cites one of these opinions as the primary explanation. B'derech she'adam rotze leilich molichin oso. The way a person wants to go, Hashem leads him. If a person has positive goals and wants to do the right thing, Hashem gives him all the opportunities that lead him on a good path to good outcomes. And if he wants to do evil and wickedness, Hashem also helps him do this. The lesson from here is that our goals have more of an impact on who we become than anything else. More than circumstances and definitely more than fate. Our life is like a choose-your-own-adventure novel. All the choices are in there. Our book of life is written in such a way that our choices and our desires drive the story forward. To take this full circle in our choose-your-own-adventure story, we should always choose the path that will emphasize our soul rather than our bodies. This will allow us not to harden our hearts and to stay open to doing the right thing. Let's go back to examining the first makkah listed in this week's parsha, the makkah of locusts. At the beginning of the parsha, Hashem said to Moshe, "Come to Paro, go to him at his home as we discussed and warn him because he doesn't want to know and recognize my wonders. I am prepared to send him locusts, arba, grasshoppers that will cover the whole land and they'll eat all the trees and the fields of the grass and your homes will be filled and the houses of all of Paro's servants and the houses of all the Mitzrayim with a kind of locust that your fathers and your father's fathers have never seen from the day that they were in this land until today." Vayifen ve'yitzei me'im Paro. And Moshe turned and he left from Paro. At that point, Paro's servant said to him, "Until when will it be that this Moshe is a trap for us? He already told us what he wants. And he said, send the men and they will go and they will serve their God. Before you know it, Mitzrayim is going to be lost with your stubbornness. We see from day to day that it's getting worse and worse. How long can we wait?" So Paro calls back Moshe and Aaron, and Paro says to them, "Go and serve Hashem your God. But tell me, exactly who will be going?" So Moshe says to him, "What is it that you're saying, who are going? We're all going, with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters, with our sheep and our cattle. All of us are going because it's a holiday for Hashem for us. We all must go." Moshe was speaking about here the holiday of Sukkot, because that's when they would receive the Torah. The word in the pasuk is Chag, which means that there are only three options what date Moshe is referring to: Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. The holiday when the whole nation will serve Hashem outside of Mitzrayim can only refer to Shavuos. So Moshe says, we're going to be serving Hashem and getting the Torah. Paro says to Moshe, Ra'o ki ra'a neged pnechem, I see bad opposite you. Paro says, I think this is bad news. What is it to you that you're taking all these children? Only the men, the adults, should go, because you said you need to bring karbanos, sacrifices, so I understand men needing to go. But what about women and small children? They're not going to be sacrificing animals, so why do they need to go? And this reason, I don't believe you. I think you want to escape from Mitzrayim to the desert. The Rabbeinu B'chaye and Rashi looks at the word, these words, ki ra'a neged pnechem, I see bad against you, and give a midrashic explanation. What Paro was saying is, I can promise you that in the desert, absolutely nothing good is waiting for you. On the contrary, you're going to regret this, because I see and foretell in the stars that one very bad star has arisen that shows that your blood is going to be spilled in the desert. I see it's going to be very bad for you. Ra'ah. It's going to be bad. Bad waits for you in the desert. Why are you running to something ra'ah, bad? This star's name was ra'ah, bad, because it causes bad for people. The Tzenet Rena says that the truth was, this time, Paro saw something correctly, because at the time that Bnei Israel made the Egon, Hashem wanted to kill them. Only Moshe, with his tefilos, convinced Hashem to switch blood for the blood of the Bris Milah that Bnei Israel circumcised themselves before they entered Eretz Israel. Yoshua gave them a Bris Milah, and the words of Paro were made true when he saw that the blood of Bnei Israel would be spilled in the desert. This was the blood of the Milah, not the blood of Bnei Israel being killed in the desert. Moshe said after the sin of the golden calf in his tefillah, why should the Mitzrayim say that with bad, with ra'ah, you took them out? If you destroy Bnei Israel, then the Mitzrayim will say, didn't we say this would happen, that Hashem wants to destroy Bnei Israel? He took them out of Mitzrayim with ra'ah, with the bad star. He took them out to destroy them. And all the miracles, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, that you did in Egypt will be forgotten, because they're going to say it was all just constellations. The word ra'ah, bad, shows up again in Yehoshua after the circumcision in Perek Hay, in the fifth Perek, after entering the land of Israel. So a connection is made by Rashi and the Medrash between these three events. Paro says, I see bad. Moshe says, don't do bad. And in Yehoshua, it says the bad was removed. I found this particular passage from the Tzenet Rena very interesting, as there's a principle that the Jewish people are not subject to constellations. So why should the fact that Paro says that they're going to be having a constellation, should Moshe Rabbeinu have davened and that have an impact? Why is there anything to do with constellations? So I started doing some research. And this midrashic approach is quoted by Rashi. So I looked in the Gor Aryeh, who interprets Rashi to mean that the Jews weren't actually subject to the constellations. Rather, Hashem wanted to benefit the Jewish people, so he changed what was a bad decree in the stars to an excellent decree, so that Hashem could do more kindness for the Jewish people. He didn't just remove the bad, he increased the good. The Tzenet Rena doesn't seem to agree with this approach, and it seems to me that he's saying that there was still some level of influence, of mazel, of constellations, of horoscope, astrology, that had an impact on the Jewish people, unless it was counteracted by Hashem. This is a big lesson for this whole series. When I read the Tzenet Rena, when you read the Tzenet Rena, he tells over the Medrash and the Rashi and Rabbeinu B'chaye in a very conversational tone. So I totally missed the first time I was reading through the Parsha that there was a chiddush, a new insight or a disagreement that is contained in the few sentences that he devotes to this topic. Only after studying Rashi, the Gor Aryeh, the other Mefarshim on Rashi and Rabbeinu B'chaye did I realize that I had ignored a gem that was there all along. Back to the Parsha in the Tzenet Rena. Paro expels Moshe and Aaron from his house, and Hashem says to Moshe, Nete yadcha al eretz Mitzrayim, stretch your hand on the land of Mitzrayim with locusts, so the locusts will come. And that's what Moshe did. He stretched his hand, and Hashem let an eastern wind blow all day and all night, and the wind carried the locusts, and it covered the ground, and the earth was darkened because of them. They ate all the vegetables and all the grains that were in the field. And the word locust is written in the Parsha seven times because there were seven types of grasshoppers, big, small, red, black, white, and brown. Paro then says to Moshe and Aaron, I've sinned to Hashem your God and to you, and now please bear my sin this time, and ask Hashem to take from me this death. What did Paro mean that he said, I have sinned to you, that I expelled, and he said that it means that that Paro was apologizing to Moshe for having expelled him from his house. Rabbeinu Bachai writes that the locusts bit the eyes of the Mitzrayim, and so a lot of death resulted from this. And therefore, Paro said, remove from me this death, because it was mamish, it was actually death. This is an interpretation of what this pasuk means, as others comment that the Egyptians were blinded, which is compared to death in the Torah. The Tzen Arena seems to be saying they actually died from being bitten in their eyes, while others interpret the fact that they were bitten in their eyes to mean that they were blinded only. Moshe davened, and Hashem sent a strong western breeze that carried the locusts from Mitzrayim, and they got stuck in the Yam Suf, and not a single locust remained in Mitzrayim. This was in itself a miracle. Generally, with locusts, they travel in one direction, always moving forward. To move backwards had to have been done as a miracle by Hashem. The Imre Noam says the reason Hashem took the locusts to the sea, as opposed to letting them just travel forward, was that Hashem intended that if the Mitzrayim would chase after Bnei Israel into the sea, the locusts would rise up from the sea and they would bite them in the eyes, because every makkah that existed in Mitzrayim returned at the time of the Yam Suf. Lo nishar arba echad. So what happens at the end of this makkah? Not one single locust remained in the land of Egypt. Not even a single grasshopper remained in Mitzrayim. Because what did the Egyptians do? They were smart. They saw all these locusts. And so they said, we might as well get something out of it. We're going to salt them and put them in barrels. And when the time came for the locusts and they needed to get out of the way, all the grasshoppers that were in the salt got up and flew out so that the Mitzrayim couldn't benefit from them. Rabbeinu Bachai writes that inside the barrels they became alive and they escaped. Why was this so? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had davened that in the land of Egypt, there forever and ever should be no more locusts. So from that time that Moshe Rabbeinu davened that there shouldn't be any more locusts in Mitzrayim, there were no more locusts that could be in Egypt. In Eretz Israel, sometimes there are locusts, but those locusts don't come to the land of Egypt. And even if they happen to pass by the way the land of Egypt, they don't damage the land of Egypt because Moshe Rabbeinu davened that the locusts should be removed. I know this is getting to be a long shir, but I think it's important and these are also fascinating, but I found this to be another fascinating point from the Tzen Arena. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu davened for the locusts, Moshe also davened that the frogs should return to the Nile. And so for this reason, there is an amphibious animal that lives in the Nile, and from time to time she gets up onto dry land and eats one or two or three people, and then she goes back into the Nile. And the English commentators on the Rabbeinu Bachaye describe this animal as the crocodile, who's never going to leave the Nile because of what Moshe said, that the Tzvardeya should return to the Nile. So why is this so? Why, because Moshe said there should be no more locusts, or that the Tzvardeya should exist in the Nile, is this forever and ever? I think this ties into who Moshe Rabbeinu is. We say about Moshe, Moshe emes v'sarasu emes. Moshe is true and the Torah is true. The order of this phrase is very important. We know that everything Moshe says is true as we saw him speaking to Hashem face to face. Therefore, because we know everything he says is true, we know the Torah he transmitted to us is also true and will never be able to be changed. The lesson I think here is that even Moshe Rabbeinu's prayers for Egypt had an eternity associated with them that was unlike anyone else's prayers, because Moshe Rabbeinu has a different status. Everything he does is eternal. Today, and with that, we're going to conclude the study of Makas Arba, of the study of the plague of the locust. Today, we have done a really deep dive into the Makos as a whole and into one Maka in particular. There are a number of lessons that we explored, how the Makos were both a Midah Keneged Midah, a judgment for the Egyptians, while also serving as a sign of love for the Jewish people. We discussed how we can choose whether to live lives like Paro, where we focus on our physicality, or we could choose our goals and focus on our spirituality. We looked at the interpretation of one phrase and how a few words of the Tzen Arena were interpretation of the Midrash, rather than just a retelling. And to truly to understand the Tzen Arena, he must be compared to contemporaries and to the other Rishonim who preceded him. Finally, we looked at how the prayers of Moshe were qualitatively different from the prayers of others, just as the prophecy, the nevuah of Moshe, is qualitatively different than all other prophets. This difference is fundamental to our beliefs in Torah. There is so much more in the parsha, but I'm going to leave it to you to unpack and discover. Have a good Shabbos.